I did have an Uncrustable, but I kind of regretted it.
I am in charge. That's not a good idea.
I just have to thug it out.
This game had no plot, therefore, neither will this podcast.
Thank God for other people's butts. Holding the high line with Rabbi in red, talking the rabbits and turning heads, with questions from you and analysis, in your car, in your home, thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line. Hello, Colorado Rapids fans. You are listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. It is Tuesday, March 11th, 2025. Sasha Kleschen has recruited Bradley Wright Phillips, Dax McCarty, and Benny Failhaber, along with others, to join the Des Moines Menace for their U.S. Open Cup run for this season. So last year's guest appearance by Sasha that was purely there for the memes has now turned into the Menace becoming retired MLS guys united. I do not want to be the MLS team that gets cup set by them in the next couple of months. Manchester United has announced a new circus tent stadium redesigned for Old Trafford. I'm sure sacking the kit man and getting rid of the free lunches is totally going to be able to pay for that. But none of that matters because Rafael Navajo turned heel at Q2 Stadium. Georgi Mihailovic got his cathartic return to Q2 on Saturday, and the Rapids got a big road win against Austin FC. Joining me now, the only man who I would want to Monday Night Raw tag team with, Rabbi Mark Goodman. Yeah, I'm more of a SmackDown guy. But anyways, okay. No, I actually don't watch any wrestling. I don't mind wrestling documentaries. I mean, that's the kind of effete snob that I am. That, like, I'm interested in this in a cinematic and theoretical. And I saw that Mickey Rourke movie a couple years ago, The Wrestler. I didn't really love it, but, like, I kind of, you know, I appreciated it.
I loved the biopic on the Van Horn family, Mark, that had the guy from The Bear, and then who is it? Zac Efron was the main protagonist.
That one was really good. Cool.
Really dark, but like most behind the scenes things when it comes to fake wrestling, but really, really cool. I'm obviously Dwayne The Rock Johnson in this analogy, Mark, as the Miami Hurricane on the podcast, but with way less bicep muscle mass and way more hair, which I assume makes up for it. And I don't know which, I don't know if you want to be John Cena in this analogy now that he's a heel, or I don't know, is Triple H still around? I'm not update on my WWE.
You're the one who brought up wrestling. I have literally no understanding at all about wrestling, but all I know about John Cena is whenever we say his name in our family, both my kids go, dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun. So that's basically what I know about John Cena. I don't think my kids have ever watched a minute of wrestling in their entire lives either, nor do they do much wrestling. I used to wrestle with my sister all the time when we were kids, and my kids don't even lay a finger on each other. I maybe I'm not raising children properly. I may be a failure as a father. I'm doing the best I can. There's no wrestling either on television or in movies or in actual life for my family, and I guess that's just the way it is. There's nothing I can do about it.
You damn Gen Xers, Mark, with your growing up with violence and being the last generation to play outside, and here you are gentle parenting your nice and wonderful Jewish children. How dare you?
I don't think I'm gentle parenting, but, like, you know, I think the way people this generation parent kids is by, like, kind of like vaguely alluding to how much they would have gotten their ass kicked by my grandparents if they had said what they just said. But, you know, I guess not. I don't know. Who knows? We'll see.
We've got a great show for you tonight, Mark. Let's hit a couple.
We always have a great show. Goes without saying.
Let's hit some banter topics here, Mark. We'll start with the non-Rapids related, which is Manchester United announced a £2.6 billion new stadium design for Old Trafford. Unclear whether or not this is going to exist on the existing plot of Old Trafford or somewhere else. But so they've got new renderings out. It's going to seat like 100,000 people. It's got like this weird like circus tent kind of look. People have equated it to architecture that we see in Saudi Arabia. Connect some dots there for me if you want, your listeners. And of course, Mark, the comments like on pretty much anything Manchester United does at this point are just absolutely roasting them with about how Jim Ratcliffe came out about how they were going to go bust by Christmas because of how much overspending and how much debt they were in because the Glazers were using them as a slush fund. They are sacking, kit men and administrative staff. They got rid of the free lunches for the volunteers who work for the stadium and everything. Casemiro still is making more money than the collective in a week than the collective salaries of some of the people who they've sacked and everything. And now suddenly it's, oh, we're fine. We've got $2.5 billion to spend on a new stadium. Mark, most importantly, how excited are you for Mikel Arteta to absolutely troll Manchester United when they go in fully healthy and Bukayo Saka scores a hat trick and they win at this big new dumb stadium in 3 years?
Do we really think it'll be done in 3 years? I mean, I guess.
Okay, whenever it happens, Mark, I'm not convinced that Man United is going to be good by the time the stadium is open.
That's a really good question. I mean, I think the theory in American sports, this occurred to me. I think a lot of people are dunking on it, and I don't like the architectural renderings. I mean, I think they're gaudy and kind of over the top. But to be fair, Matt, like all stadiums these days, especially with the big like 50 teams in sports, are over the top. I remember when Stan Kroenke, hallowed be his name, he says tongue in cheek, built the new Rams stadium in LA, which I believe is now called SoFi Stadium, which I think there's a 50-50 chance I'll go see a football match at this summer because I'm likely to be in LA with Iggy for maybe the Club World Cup. So we'll see what happens. And if not, I'll catch a game in Exposition Park again, LAFC on the road or something like that, if I get to go to LA. But you know, it seems like a ridiculous over-the-top stadium at $2.1 billion when they built it. And now it's just kind of a stadium, you know? And I think that that's when you have that much money and you have those kinds of choices, you just make them. So I guess they're kind of making a splash. I don't really mind the renderings too much. And I do think the other thing is a lot of times when you inaugurate a new stadium, you want to get people in the building and you know the building is probably not going to do it. So you also spend the money on a big fancy player. So, you know, whoever the Cristiano Ronaldo of the moment is, that's the guy they're going to go out and get. I mean, they're going to, you know, maybe Mbappe will be, you know, still the guy back at that point. Maybe Saka will be available, you know, like, I don't know, but like maybe Lamine Yamal. I don't remember how to pronounce it. Will be like in his prime and they'll pry him loose for like $2 billion. Like who
Moise Bombito is the new signing to replace Harry Maguire.
Yeah.
The new Old Trafford.
Those marquee center back signings out of the French league is like, you know, I mean, like I got to watch Moise a couple weeks ago in a game. And he looked good. You know, he was really good. I mean, it was OGC Nice was getting, at the time, they were getting knocked out of the Europa League. It was their final match, and they were down a couple goals in the aggregate. So, but yeah, I am an Arsenal fan, so I am not, and you're a Fulham fan. So, like, both of us are experiencing epic levels of schadenfreude watching Manchester United be terrible, and additional levels watching the comment section just flame them completely. But there's no joy in Mudville for me for this. Like, I don't take pleasure in my enemy's downfall. I don't want Manchester United to be in the top four because it would squeeze out a place for Arsenal. But I wouldn't mind if they're in the top four as long as Arsenal's above them in the table.
Last thing that I'll say on this, Marco, that I thought was funny. I don't know who sent this to me because I definitely saw this as a comment. There was somebody who commented that it looked kind of like the main terminal at DIA with like the tent look at DIA is supposed to be the snow-capped mountains, but it kind of has that look, but only with the three of them, I suppose. And the other funny thing, apparently there's going to be like a structure at the top of the tallest one, and somebody comments in that that'll probably be the away end where they put the Manchester City fans, which I thought was, again, just the internet being the internet, and it's cynical, and it's funny, and Manchester United is an easy thing to dunk on right now, given their history and given their ownership situation.
By the way, just going to give some occasional updates to the Cruz Azul Seattle game, which is going on right now as we speak. Cruz Azul up 1-0. There was a draw in the first leg. So if Seattle loses, they're out of CONCACAF Champions Cup. And Paul Arriola just crumpled to the ground at the end of the first half with what looks like a pretty bad injury. It's he's grabbing the back of his right knee in a spot that either screams cruciate ligament injury or hamstring injury, or maybe if he's lucky, a thigh or a calf injury. But like, you know, Seattle's down bad right now in all the ways, and they're on the road in Mexico, so it's not so good. By the way, Cruz Azul, the Rapids' first opponent, I think, in the League's Cup, right?
Yeah, that sounds
maybe
right,
the Mark. Second opponent, but anyways.
And I just turned over my shoulder, Mark, to check the screen. I've got Columbus LAFC on mute, and they're at halftime, and they're 2-0 to Columbus. So that's currently 3-2 on aggregate. So we'll see whether or not Chirundolo and non-racist Sergei Palencia, whether or not they fumble the bag in that one.
Allegedly Mark, non-racist.
Mark, let's talk about good things in Rapid Land, which is that the United States men's national team announced their roster for the CONCACAF Nations League, which will take place later this month, and goalkeeper Zach Steffen has joined the squad, along with former Colorado Rapid and current starter for Celtic in the Scottish Premiership. Austin Trusty is also in that group as well. The semifinals will be on Thursday, March 20th, and then both the final and the third place game will be on Sunday, March 23rd. Presumably, Mark, Zach Steffen will be available for this weekend, which is the road game at San Jose, but then expectedly will not be available for the home match on March 22nd, Women's Empowerment Night against Portland Timbers. And Mark, Zach Steffen is joined alongside Columbus Crew goalkeeper Patrick Schulte, who he shared time with when it's been mostly an MLS call-up group. And then Matt Turner, I would say the established starter for the U.S. men's national team, started at the World Cup in Qatar, but obviously hasn't been playing a whole lot for, is he not even Forest? I don't even remember where. I don't know where Matt Turner is. I think is he on loan to Bournemouth, Mark? Anyways, Matt Turner's there, Mark.
I thought he was at Forest. So, but that's a great
question. Let's Google this because we're a podcast that does our research. Matt Turner is at Crystal Palace. I apologize. Got that wrong. And he has played no games for them on loan. So great. So Matt Turner not playing a lot for Crystal Palace. Obviously, they're mid-table in the Premiership alongside Fulham. So in any case, Mark, Zach Steffen gets the start for the first time in almost 2 years in the January camp. Makes a couple of really good saves. Gets a clean sheet. He's feeling good about that. He's had a good start to the season, I will argue. We'll talk
former
about
Colorado Rapid Austin Trusty also gets the nod. He's playing for Celtic right now.
Yeah, and so Zach Steffen playing well, Mark. He's gotten two clean sheets on the road. And, Mark, I think if we're talking about he gets one palm to that shot from Marky Delgado, I think we're maybe also talking about Zach Steffen, who's played well and only given up one goal against LAFC and advanced in the CONCACAF Champions against LAFC. Mark, what do we make about this opportunity for Zach? But also, where do we see him on the depth chart in terms of potentially getting minutes in this Nations League competition?
I don't know. I mean, that's actually the most important question here. I mean, I think Matt Turner is the number one for the USMNT, period. But it's a really good question as to kind of like how this plays itself out. The schedule goes: the US will play Jamaica at AT&T Stadium, and Panama will play Mexico, and then in the next. That was last year. Actually, they don't have the schedule up for the games. I wonder why that is. Maybe it's just because the MLS website is not very good. But yeah, so I think if the U.S. is playing
They're playing Panama at 5 p.m. Mountain Time in the
semifinal. Right, but don't they have a second game or a second set of games coming shortly thereafter?
So the winners play each other in the final on Sunday. Right. The losers play each other in the third place game on
Sunday.
So
there's two games guaranteed. Yes. Yeah,
two games guaranteed over the weekend of the Portland game. So unless Steffen gets sent home after the first game, he will miss the Portland game.
So my take is, I guess, that I think Zach Steffen is the presumptive backup, which makes me think that like you play, but it's CONCACAF Nations League doesn't matter. So you're still trying to figure out who your number one is. So you treat it like an exhibition, and therefore you play two different goalkeepers in the two matches. And I don't think who wins it matters at all to me. Like if the U.S. wins the CONCACAF Nations League, does it make a sound? You know, like is this the kind of trophy that like anyone will remember? Like I can only barely remember when the U.S. has won the Gold Cup. But like everyone at this point in USMNT land is at the point where we really want to win big trophies. You know, we want to win. We want to win the, what's the one we play against South America when we're drawn into South America?
Copa America.
Copa America. We want to win Copa America. And if we can't win Copa America, and even more than Copa America, we want to win a World Cup, or we want to make a World Cup semifinal. For me, a World Cup semifinal, making it to the World Cup semifinal, would be like winning the World Cup. I think that that is a totally reasonable thing to say. So that being said, this is should be treated as an exhibition match. If Zach Steffen doesn't get the nod in either game, I think we can understand that he's considered salty veteran, you know, color, as opposed to, and like a good locker room guy, as opposed to a valued and relied upon member of this team. I mean, Patrick Schulte is a really fantastic goalkeeper. I think the question for Schulte will be, does he get a move abroad? If foreign teams start coming calling to Columbus to bring him out, I think he might pip Matt Turner for number one. But I don't think you find those things out in the USMNT. You find those things out from their club form. And so right now, Schulte's a great player. The math from last season implies he's a better goalkeeper than Zach Steffen. But, you know, maybe Steffen is settling in. Maybe the math was going against him. I think Steffen's been pretty good. I think he had one howler howler's a strong word. He had a soft goal against Dallas that he conceded. But other than that, he's been solid, and that's a pretty good place to be. Where are you at, Matt?
I agree with you, Mark, that he's definitely, I would be surprised if it's not Matt Turner starting both of these games. I'll disagree with you, Rabbi, that this competition doesn't matter, because in lieu of qualification games, in lieu of going through the gauntlet of World Cup qualification, the only real competitive games you're going to get are going to be Nations League and then either friendlies against other good CONCACAF competition, which at this point for me is just Canada and Mexico, or games against South American powers or against European powers. So the fact is, the U.S. has functionally a warm-up game against Panama, and then no matter what, whether they win or lose, they're going to play either Canada or they're going to play Mexico. That makes the second game, I think, a useful exercise. I'll agree with you that the lack of World Cup qualification and the fact that Nations League is happening almost every single year at this point kind of saturates the significance of it. But so I will say that this is a useful exercise. I would assume right now that if Mauricio Pochettino had to announce who the starter was going to be for that first game, it was probably going to be Matt Turner. I do believe, Mark, with the new rules now, that it's the entire team is on the bench. So it's not like you've only got the 18, it's the 25. So Whoa. If you're not starting hurt, I think you're on the bench. So that's a lack of information, Mark, because then if you've only got the 18-man squad, presumably you're not going to put two goalkeepers in that group. So then that would tell us, if that was the case, that would tell us who's the starter, who's the backup, and then the third guy out is the Nick Raimondo of the team, to go back to like how Bruce Arena had the team, and Nick Raimondo was never in the game day squad for a World Cup qualifier because he was a good hang and a good useful training player, but he was never going to start over Tim Howard or Brad Guzan or Brad Friedel or Casey Keller, those kinds of
players. He should have, but that's my opinion. I'm the one, Rapids fans are supposed to preternaturally hate on Nick Raimondo. I could never bring myself to. I loved the way he played the game, and to be honest, a short guy goalkeeper who is one of MLS's best goalkeepers of all time, bring it on, baby. I just love the little guy who defied the odds story. But anyways,
Mark,
Nick Raimondo podcast.
Yes, I don't think, I think right now Zach Steffen is probably not the starter for these two games. We will see whether or not he gets game time. I think this will be useful because he got some training time in the camp last year where he got a minor injury and wasn't available to play. He comes back. He plays well in January camp. He gets a game. He plays well in that. And then he follows that up by playing well for his club team. So to your point as well, Mark, I think clearly we can see from the call-ups that Poch has had, some of which has been advantageous for calling a more MLS group, some of which has been advantageous for calling a European group, and now with a mixed group as well, that for the most part, it's guys who are either established that they are the go-to starter right now for the national team, going back to Greg Berhalter in the summer and prior to that in Copa America, or it's a guy who's playing right now at his club team in a good situation, regardless of whether or not it is a regardless of whether or not they're playing in Europe. And Mark, I do wonder, I saw a really good point. I don't know if this was from MLS Moves or from Tactics Managers. I don't pay a lot of attention, listeners, to the kind of dude bro Twitter space when it comes to the U.S. national team fan base, but there was some good dialogue, Mark, about the fact that this had some decent USMNT or some decent MLS representation. And at what point do the USMNT dude bros who hate on MLS, who thought Luca De La Torre was the bee's knees, but now he's washed because he's come back and playing for San Diego, at what point do those guys admit if Poch brings in a handful of MLS guys and they're the first guy off the bench, or there's four or five of them starting, do you have to admit maybe MLS isn't as bad as you think it is? Or at what point, Mark, do we legitimately see USMNT guys calling that Poch should be fired because he doesn't know what he's doing because he's bringing in guys like Zach Steffen who are playing in MLS? I don't know. I'm just a guy with a podcast. Anything else you want to talk about?
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to say, like, it's fascinating to me how to see how the teams got there. So it feels like the top five teams in CONCACAF have always been the top five teams forever. I know that's not true, but it feels that way. So the final four teams, of course, in this semi are Canada playing Mexico and United States playing Panama. The winners will face each other. Like you said, the losers will face each other. The eight teams. So when they got to the elite eight round of the thing, it was Costa Rica and Panama, naturally. Jamaica and United States, naturally. Honduras and Mexico, naturally. Matt, any idea who Canada played to get there?
I'm going to say Curaçao.
Good guess. That's a very good guess. You knew it was going to be an oddball, but not like Suriname, a country that I pretty much regularly forget is in CONCACAF, because I generally think, isn't that South America? But I guess they're not for whatever reason. The other thing is, you know, there's also League B and League C. Who is the worst team in CONCACAF this cycle?
The worst?
Take a guess. Who had the worst goal differential in the lowest league?
I'm going to guess small Caribbean island, Mark.
Yes. Which small Caribbean island, though?
Is it one of the ones that has, like, the two names and the two islands?
It's a tie. That would be one of the two correct answers.
Yes. St. Kitts and Nevis.
I didn't see them at all in here. I actually think they're in League B. I think they're like up. I didn't see them at all. I'm not sure why they were not mentioned. The worst team in League C was the U.S. Virgin Islands, who scored 4 goals and conceded 14 goals, tied with Turks and Caicos Island. You know, they got to bring 2 whole islands to the battle, and they still couldn't win the game. I take it back. Their goal differential was -8, but they conceded 10 goals. So the worst team is the U.S. Virgin Islands.
Okay.
Sorry, guys.
Mark, I love that. I love that CONCACAF joke that Roger Bennett always makes, that, like, you know, going up against the team that has the two names is like going up against two teams. You know, should only have to play Bosnia or Herzegovina, not Bosnia and Herzegovina.
That was kind of my joke, but I didn't make it very well. So, and it's been a long time since I heard Roger Bennett make that joke. So I'll have to tune in again and see it.
Yay, Zach. Congratulations on once again being called up for the U.S. men's national team. We hope you play. We hope you don't get hurt. Come back healthy and hopefully help the Rapids continue to get clean sheets and get results. Mark, this past Saturday at Q2 Stadium, the Colorado Rapids won their first game, got their first win of the MLS season. It was a 1-0 victory over Austin FC. A bit of a lineup jumble after Reggie Cannon was unavailable due to a groin injury. So you saw a back four that saw Andreas Maxu return to the lineup. And Maxu was making his debut for the year, previously dealing with an injury. Ian Murphy played in the left back position. Mark, and I would say it was an even game overall in the first half. Mark, 18th minute, Colorado Rapids scored the only goal of the game. Rafael Navajo with some heel energy doing the "you can't see me, John Cena" celebration. And this came after a sequence that saw Cole Bassett, Ollie Larraz, and Georgi Mihailovic combine in a very direct way up the midfield. Love to see it. And then a perfectly weighted ball from Georgi to play it to Hoffa, and then a perfect chip over Brad Stuver. Love to see it. 1-0 Colorado Rapids. Mark, I would argue this was a game that was really, it was a lot of low quality opportunities in Austin trying to move it around to try and unlock the Rapids defense, putting a lot of crosses in for headers that, for the most part, Cheeto, Murphy, Maxu, Steffen were able to deal with that. and it was punctuated by the occasional very dangerous opportunity for Austin and the occasional counterattack opportunity for the Rapids, who I would argue, Mark, despite not having possession, having lower XG, and having fewer number of shots, crosses, corners, etc., for the most part were controlling the game based on just the ineptitude of Austin being a new team that's jumbled up its lineup. Uzuni hasn't scored yet. Brandon Vasquez, excellent player, excellent acquisition by Austin, also hadn't scored. And Mark, there was a really telling moment for me. I think this was in the first half where Vasquez had, I think, probably his best chance of the game. It was a header that was in a good situation. Zach Steffen was in a good position in the goal. It was completely off target. And you saw Vasquez fall to the ground and just be extremely frustrated. And just the lesson, the signal to me there was that just they weren't going to score. And as long as the Rapids gave them nothing in terms of open looks, they were going to be okay. There were a couple nervy moments and fire drills for the Rapids. The first would have come in the first half where Steffen and Uzuni battle for a ball. Uzuni gets to it first. It goes off the post. Ian Murphy bounces it then to Steffen, who's able to fall on it. And then this would have been in the earlier than that, Mark, or after that, it would have been in the 43rd minute when Uzuni had another header that Steffen gets a touch to, plays it off the crossbar, and then gets dealt with. And I think, Mark, other than the two potential penalties, those were the two best chances that, certainly the best chances on goal that Austin had in this game. You had a couple chances in dangerous moments, not necessarily dangerous sequences, for the Rapids in the second half. You had the 43rd minute play, Mark, where the Austin player passes it inexplicably right to Rafael Navajo. He dribbles forward and tries to go it alone. Shot curls wide of the far post. That was a missed opportunity for me. The first Austin penalty that was overturned would have been called in the 51st minute. Chido and Uzuni kind of battle for the ball. Uzuni is deemed to be offside, very clear and obvious on the replay, but then Uzuni has a step on Chido. Chido tugs him down, kind of a 50-50 one, Mark, where I think Uzuni establishes position, but also kind of forces the contact. So then at what point do you judge the attacking player for forcing the contact, but also being the beneficial, also benefiting from the way that the moment is officiated? I think is an interesting philosophical referee question for Chris Rivett and the guys over at Pro. In any case, goes to VAR, goes to the monitor. He's offside. Job done on that. You had the situation, Mark, where the Rapids got an opportunity off of Desler pulling his hamstring in the 53rd minute, and the cross goes in and is kind of easily dealt with Brad Stuver. And for me, Mark, probably the two most frustrating moments of the night from the Rapids attacking standpoint. You had the 67th minute counterattack where Bassett's trying to be the late runner into the box and Georgie's trying to lay it off to him, and a very clear tactical foul by an Austin defender, and that's a no call, which probably should have been a foul and then a yellow card for impeding Bassett. And if that doesn't happen, Mark, I think Bassett gets onto the end of it and he has a chance for a tap in or at least a 1v1 with Stuver. Frustrating night for Cole Bassett, who then later in the half had a back heel that got blocked, and you kind of saw his emotional frustration. Body language hasn't been great for Cole, Mark. I think overall he's played well. Cole is a guy who lives off the confidence of scoring goals and getting assists. We saw a previous season with the Rapids where he went from being goal Bassett to post Bassett, and we saw that frustrate him and affect the other parts of his game. I'm not worried about it yet, Mark, but it's certainly Cole needs a goal at some point in the month of March probably, and then I think he'll feel okay. And if that's coupled also with the Rapids playing well and getting results, I think he'll be fine. I think overall still the triple pivot and what's going on with him, Ollie, and Atencio is getting better. And then ultimately, Mark, the definitive moment of the night would have come into the second minute of stoppage time, where Wayne Frederick and Diego Rubio, former Colorado Rapid, substitute for Austin, have a race to a loose ball in the middle of the pitch, and it's called a penalty after the two kind of clunk in. The ball goes away from goal and behind Diego Rubio, and then Rubio takes a tumble, Mark, and does a very not Kylian Mbappe, who am I thinking? Neymar kind of rolled, where I think Rubio was ready to roll into the net and have that be counted towards a goal. It's called a penalty. There are several minutes of stoppage time as we're waiting, almost set up to take it. Referee then goes to the monitor and determines that Frederick got to it first. I think very clear, yeah. Mark. I don't know how Diego Rubio would have taken that touch there, Mark, and have it go behind him and that's to right. His left when the goal is in front of him. So if anything, it's Rubio who goes late and studs up on Wayne Frederick. And that was pretty much it, Mark. 1-0 win. I will throw it to you. Rabbi's choice. Good thing, bad thing, or big thing?
I'll start with good thing. I mean, it's 3 points, so that's huge. I think there's a lot of interesting things to talk about. I wrote a back pass, which should be coming out tomorrow if I get my stuff together tonight and try and polish it off. But the big thing in this one was 3 points. The big thing from the 3 points was the Rapids getting a lead and then holding it on the road. And I think that the way they set up tactically allowed them to do that. It's very interesting to think about the many different ways you prepare a soccer team for a game. You prepare them for the 0-0 experience. And then based on what happens next, I think teams practice for what happens, whether you score the goal first and you are defending on the road, or whether you are you concede on the road and then what you have to do. And so I think there's a kind of a mentality and a tactic that goes into that. The other thing that I think teams tend to work on is phases of the game and points of emphasis. So the points of emphasis are, do we want to squeeze them in the middle and force them to go wide? Do we want to press them at the back and force them to kick it long? Do we want to maintain possession and keep them from having possession? Do we want to mark them all over the field and just make it very difficult? Do we mostly want to kind of like sit mid to low block and make sure that they don't get out in transition? Or do we want to kind of do all those things, right? And have no specific point of emphasis, but just say, we want to do all the things. You know, I think that, there's a danger to that, saying we want to do all the things well, or we want to set up in a very average and neutral position so that they don't take advantage of us in the middle of the field. They don't take advantage of us wide. They don't take advantage of us with long balls. They don't take advantage of us with ticky-tack and in tight and short. So I don't think that that's a great way to set up. I think that there was a definite idea here that Chris Armas gave this team. They seem to have executed it and did it well. He says, as the camera in the CONCACAF match flashes to former Colorado Rapid Vicente Sanchez on the sidelines for Cruz Azul. You know, it's hard to not root for the MLS team over the Mexican team. I think I'm all in for Cruz Azul now until they've come to Commerce City. But anyways, my point is this. I think that the Rapids executed very well in this game. My one caveat, and this isn't a bad thing because I want to reserve my time for bad thing, which is it was Austin. And Austin finished, I think, 12th last year. They were pretty bad as a soccer team. I think one of the things that I'm slightly concerned at is we have yet to face a team and get a result that we didn't expect. We didn't expect to beat LAFC over two legs. We didn't. We didn't expect that St. Louis would be very good. They weren't. We drew them. We didn't expect that Dallas would be very good. They weren't. We drew them, you know? So this is the first time that we've gotten kind of an expected result out of what we wanted. So, and that's a good thing. Matt, what do you gave the rundown. Do you want to do, you can do bad thing and big thing, or bad thing and good thing, or good thing and big thing, or all three, whatever you want. It's your podcast.
I want to highlight some individual performances here, Mark. We got to speak to Georgie post-game, and let me pull up the exact quote that he had, and then I'll try to connect some dots, because Georgie Mihailovic is a certain way with the media, and you know, he'll have quiet thoughts and then not necessarily articulate them in a very direct way, and he's a very nonverbal communicator, I will say, in a lot of ways. So here's the quote, Mark. Quote, "I definitely thought about coming back here for the first time since that injury," referring to his ankle injury that would have had him out until the playoff game last year, injury on decision day. Quote, "I put that behind me. I felt good after the goal. You can't hesitate in those moments." And so I wonder here, Mark, if I'm connecting the dots or trying to understand Georgie having interacted with him and getting a better understanding of how he is in media versus how he is. And so I do wonder, the play where he injures his ankle on decision day last year at Austin against Triussi, he goes in to try and press and gegenpress and win the ball back, and he doesn't hesitate, and in that moment that leads to him getting stuffed. He has the ankle injury, has to be carted off, he limps through the second leg of the LA Galaxy playoff game, and then he's pretty much out until the start of preseason and probably shouldn't have played in that game from an injury health standpoint. And so I'm wondering, does he go back to that stadium, think about that, think about the style of play, what they're going to try and do defensively, being a little bit more, not on the back foot, but certainly conceding possession at times to Austin and having pressing triggers in certain moments. And so I think there was an opportunity there for him to hesitate because of whatever going on psychologically, thinking about coming back here and that being a place where a bad thing happened to him. And he did not hesitate. He didn't hesitate in the press, and he didn't hesitate or wait to see if there was a challenge and then to try and move into open space on that play. He knew exactly where the ball was. He knew where the defenders were. He knew that somebody could have come in. His job in that moment, Mark, was to not hesitate and get the ball to Hoffa in a good situation to feed his number nine, so his number nine can try and score the goal, so that they can try and take the lead, so that they can try and win the game. And I want to believe that that was really cathartic. And maybe, Mark, it's kind of similar to where an injury turns into gets fully healed back, but then it's kind of a psychological thing where the player has to trust that they can do the thing that they did on the play that got them hurt and that things will be okay. They can risk that 0.0001% chance that, you know, Kobe Bryant is going to tear his Achilles again and know that his body is probably going to be okay, because that's an athlete. And if you play at 80%, you're probably going to lose the game. You play at 100%, you might get injured. You might make a fantastic play that helps you score a goal. So good on Georgie for not hesitating, getting an assist after he got robbed of an assist against Dallas. Happy with that. Ian Murphy, Mark, playing out of position, or a position that he played a little bit in preseason. He prefers to be the left center back in a back three. Being a proper fullback is not something he normally is. Did a job. Went up against, I think it was Bukari, the winger for Austin, and that was not a tough, that was not an easy matchup. A couple of plays, maybe two or three, where he got skinned a little bit, but the defense was able to recover and to cover for him as well. I think he did a job, Mark. I think we're convinced on Chido Awuzie. I think we're pretty much there with Josh Atencio. Ian Murphy, not as good as Chido, probably not as good as Andreas Maxu, a really good young player who the Rapids have acquired there. And then just last thing I'll say, Mark, is just a really, as I highlighted earlier, just a really mature, gritty performance in some difficult situations of overall was a team that absolutely could be had, and the Rapids played into absolutely jobbing Austin FC. And so I thought it was a mature way to get a result, even if at times they weren't completely bossing the game. They were the protagonists without the ball, in that Austin beat them on XG, Mark, with 1.63 XG to the Rapids 0.81, but that was Austin being desperate to try and get into the game, and they basically had two or three really good opportunities that the Rapids were in good position to make a one-on-one play to prevent a goal, and the rest of them were shots outside the box that didn't threaten Zach Steffen or the goal at all. So good job on that. Kind of the last concern that I have, Mark. I mentioned earlier Cole Bassett not getting a goal, and I think that's probably something that he really needs against San Jose or against Portland. But to your point as well, Mark, this is an Austin team that rebuilt, that I think once Austin gets clicking and their new players get used to their new head coach and they get used to the style of play and some of the other things that they're going on, this will probably be a better version of Austin FC, to where, Mark, if the Rapids were to, if this game was secretly in May or June, let's say, and the Rapids pull that exact performance, that's probably a game that the Rapids draw 1-1 at best and probably lose at the end, because Austin is in a better position to create more of those high quality chances and score a goal or get a VAR call in their favor. So the Rapids are okay right now in terms of what they've done in their two road games against two teams that are still trying to figure this themselves out, Mark. I do not think this is a game, Rabbi, that if the Rapids were to try and go do this at Cincinnati or Columbus or Inter Miami or not LA Galaxy, we'll say LAFC or Seattle, is one that would be a little bit more difficult to deal with. But for where they're at and what they're trying to do, and incorporating Josh Atencio, not having a fully healthy fullback outside of Keegan Rosenberry, I'm not going to complain. But, you know, three games into the season with 5 points, certainly. Last big thing that I'll say, Mark, regardless of what Austin FC fans want to cry about on social media, VAR don't lie. The officials got both of those calls right. Uzuni clearly offside. Wayne Frederick clearly got the ball. And the fact, Mark, that the game ended with the Colorado Rapids not getting Diego Rubio'd is, I think, just poetic justice in that regard. And I'm happy for it. Anything else on Austin, Mark, or shall we move on?
Matt, you have a tradition of letting me do good thing, bad thing, or big thing, and then not letting me do the other two things. It's like a new thing for you.
I'm sorry.
No, I love it. We both get our cracks in. Your format is like your brain goes. We do good thing, bad thing, big thing. Let's throw to Mark for one of these three options, and see what he comes up with. No, go ahead, Matt.
On my honor, Mark, next week against San Jose, no matter what,
we'll do all three.
We'll do them one at a time in order, Good thing, bad thing, big thing.
Whether that's good or not, we don't know. So I'll just add the bad thing and the big thing. The bad thing is I don't think the Rapids were really the better team over 90 minutes in this match. The expected goals showed this. I thought Austin had two really good chances on net that one was a miss and one was off the top of the crossbar with Zach Steffen pushing it over. And I think the other thing is, I think your point about Paul Bassett was really good. Cole's sort of cheeky back heel that didn't go in wasn't quite powerful enough, but I think he had the right idea. His shot in the 75th minute was a great one, and you could see it on his face that he was super frustrated that he didn't hit it better. I mean, he had a really good look. There was also, on a related note, Matt, I don't know if you remembered, Keegan Rosenberry had a volley from way out, and it was like the ball kind of came to him.
Oh yeah.
And it was on the right side, and it came to him, and he just went for it. And I was like, this is the look of a man who scored a goal from his left foot a couple weeks ago and is now just like, I am immortal, I am a god, everything will go in. And I was just kind of like, dude, slow your roll. You're like, most top level strikers in the English Premier League are not going to hit that on the volley. I think, to be fair, like, you know, why not have a go is kind of an attitude, but like, dude, slow your roll. That's my take.
All hail Keegan Rosenberry's long range bombs. Long may they continue.
No, if Keegan Rosenberry hits one more ridiculous, improbable shot this season, we will rename a room in our house after him, right? Like, Michael Azira got the basement. There's still like seven rooms left in our house to be named. I don't know if it's appropriate or responsible to name bathrooms after players, unless they're like as an insult. But the basement is right next door to this room, the actual proper laundry room basement, as opposed to the guest room basement. You know, that's a very nameable room, and like, I will, Keegan, I will actually pony up for a full-on plastic plexiglass plaque with your name on it if you can hit two more audacious, ridiculous shots this season. We're naming the laundry room after you, Keegan Rosenberry. You're the cleanup man. You wash and you dry. You dunk in the sink. You know, like, whatever. I don't know. I'm going off. But back to my most important point, and then I'll call it a day as this is the big thing. The Rapids have played, I think I mentioned this since to some degree a little bit ago, but I'll just say it a slightly different way. The Rapids have played good opponents and lost. They've played mediocre opponents and drawn. They've played bad opponents and won. They didn't play great in this game and they still won, and that's good. A thing that I also wanted to add as a bad thing. I wasn't thrilled with Ian Murphy on the left back position. I think you're right, he did a yeoman's job, he did fine. My only concern is that he a lot of folks on Rapids Blue Sky, aka Burgundy Sky, are kind of saying like, oh, we're fine, you know, we're all good. You know, one of the posts I made the other day was the Rapids called up Anderson Rosa for the fourth and final time in an emergency call up from Rapids 2. If they ever want to call him up again, they have to sign him to a full senior team contract. They didn't do that last time they had the opportunity. They signed Yosuke Hanya a couple years ago. They brought him up four times, then they sent him back to R2, and that was that. I feel like that's what's going to happen with Anderson Rosa, which means that our depth at fullback, if Sam Vines isn't healthy next week, if Reggie Cannon isn't healthy next week, is, you know, Bubblegum, bailing wire and shoestrings, and that's not, I don't feel great about that, and I'm not super excited about it. The last thing I'll say is this, and I covered this in back pass in very deep depth. The midfield three in this game played very well, but Josh Atencio wasn't as involved in a lot of moments, and my concern with him is that he is still trying to figure it out. That first goal, or that only goal, Matt, was that goal started with Cole Bassett to Ollie LaRaz to Georgi Mihailovic to Rafa Navajo, And those four players have been playing together for a year and change. And Atencio kind of doesn't seem like he connects with those other players quite as well. That doesn't mean he's a bad player. It might mean that he's a bad player if he's still doing it 12 weeks from now. But it does mean for now that like he isn't combining with the rest of the team yet. So you know, limited data. I'm making big pronouncements with those are some of my like bad thing, big thing kind of moments here, which is you know, kind of good.
I can't believe we've taken till the end of this recap here, Mark, to mention Rafael Navajo, goals in back-to-back games, 3 goals in 2 games. And Georgi Mihailovic, Mark, said after the Dallas game that he thinks that Hoffa can get to 20 goals all competitions. Off to a really, really good start, Mark. If they keep feeding him, we know what he's going to be able to do, put the ball in the back of the net. And I feel good about the Rapids offense with Rafa Navajo and Georgi Mihailovic in their various roles. Can Hoffa break the club single season goal record? Can Georgi set the new assist record, even with that assist that he got against Dallas that he didn't get because MLS said that it got deflected? We'll find out. I'm excited to see what happens. Mark, you mentioned that I need to improve a little bit in terms of actually following the format of this little gag that we have of good thing, bad thing, big thing. And maybe I need something to kind of calm my mind down in order to be able to do that better when we recap the Rapids 3-0 victory at San Jose Earthquake. And Rabbi Mark Goodman, you know what could help us out with doing that?
Magic Mind.
Listeners, Mark and I have really enjoyed using Magic Mind, and they've been a wonderful partner for us here at Holding the High Line. He likes it with coffee in the morning to get his day off started. It's good and it's calm. I like their 24-hour combo pack. I can take it with the daytime. They've got a really nice matcha flavor. And then there's a nighttime version, which really helps me wind down, get to sleep, turn the phone off, not doom scroll. It's really helpful. And it helps us get calm and it helps us get focused and it makes the podcast a little better. Magic Mind has a bunch of really good vitamins and superfoods. It can help you with your mood, with your stress. It's a 2-ounce greens powder shot of goodness for deep focus that can get your workday back on track. As someone who's really caffeine sensitive, I don't get any jitters. Mark loves his caffeine. He takes it with caffeine. It works whether you're caffeine sensitive or you want a lot of caffeine. They've spent over 10 years doing research. They've done 150 different iterations, and they've gotten insight from 8 different PhDs, neurologists, and researchers. Magic Mind is the secret sauce to effortless focus, reduce stress, and long-lasting mental clarity. Give Magic Mind a try today. Visit the link in the show notes. Try their 7-day challenge. Try out their 24-hour pack. Use the discount code HIGHLINER20. That is HIGHLINER, all caps, then the numbers 2-0-2-0. Thank you to Magic Mind for sponsoring this episode and keeping us feeling very zen as the Colorado Rapids are getting road results.
Incredible. Magic Mind, their nighttime blend is called the Sleep Elixir. It has no melatonin. It includes superfoods, and it says that it is wake up refreshed and it's non-habit forming. So those are all some like really great things. I haven't tried it, Matt, so I'm looking forward to giving that a try and seeing how it goes. I assume it doesn't have any matcha in it, since matcha has all sorts of caffeine in it. But it says that the main ingredients here are a blend of botanicals including lavender, chamomile, and lemon balm. That sounds just incredibly relaxing. Maybe it's aromatherapy combined with drinks. I'm just going to add on a completely different note, Matt. You know what we have for our dedicated subscribers, aka the Highliners? What do we have for them, Matt?
Mark, do we have a merch update? Is merch being shipped?
No, but we can tell more people about the merch that we ordered last week. So I think it should be on its way. It's in production at our secret factory in the good old US of A. Actually, I have no idea where Roughneck makes their scarves. So let's just assume that it's
order
in the United States.
Order now before they get tariffed.
That's right. It's they're 100% steel, all American made steel, and aluminum. No, the new scarf has holding the High Line on one side. It has our crest designed by Dwayne Brown on the corners, and then on the back side it says "Who ordered the nachos?" Matt, I recognized after the fact that it wasn't exactly the quote that came from the podcast like 5 years ago when we originally gave it. The original quote was "Who paid for the nachos?" But I do think that "Who ordered the nachos?" works at least as well. And once you put on a scarf, it's really important to kind of just say like, this is fine and this is good. But like, just the whole idea of like Bruce Arena ordering nachos at a super draft is like one of my favorite moments all time in Major League Soccer. The funniest thing about this kind of memeable idea is that it actually doesn't really involve the Colorado Rapids. Most of the great moments in Colorado Rapids meme ability either wouldn't fit on a scarf or involve massive amounts of profanity. So we have yet to come up that, or as we learned from attempting to put together this scarf, were blatant out and out copyright violations. Well, I sent like 7 or 8 ideas to Roughneck and they were like, yeah, those are great ideas. We can't do any of those. They're all a copyright violation. So anyways, this is what we came up with. It's a good looking scarf. It's really fun. If you have a big scarf collection, and you probably do, if you're a Rapids fan and you listen to this podcast, you probably have 8 or 10 Colorado Rapids scarves that are all various states of burgundy, blue, and white. Like, do you really need an 11th? Give us your money instead, and we'll make you a really great Holding the Highline scarf. And people will be like, hey, what's Holding the Highline? You'll be like, what's Holding the Highline? Only the best podcast in God's green earth. So I'll just add one last thing. This is for our subscribers, new subscribers, old subscribers, paid subscribers specifically. And we just have 2 new subscribers this week. And we'd like to send a shout out to the 2 of them and say thank you very much for signing up. You only have a couple more weeks to sign up and get the scarf. So this is your opportunity. Go to holdingthehighline.com, read my written content, read Matt's vintage written content, and then click the subscribe and add the paid option for $48, and we will send you some merch. Shipping and handling fee will be included. We'll take the, as soon as the big box of scarves arrives at my house, I'll add the order form to for all of our paid subscribers. Additionally, one last thing, we have a few t-shirts left from last year's merch and the year before. So in the sign-up sheet, you'll have the option to purchase a discounted shirt from last year's merch run if you didn't already get one. Those shirts came in black and camo. The gray camo was really, really cool. Most of you ordered black. The gray camo is really great. And also, we have a lot of smalls and I think a fair amount of mediums. So if you know somebody who isn't very big, if you have a friend, a parent, a loved one, a coworker, and you're like, hey, they like the Rapids, or they've heard of the Rapids, or they should try this podcast, buy them a shirt. We'll give you a discount. Matt?
Well, last thing that I want to say here, Mark, in the spirit, it is very on brand for Holding the Highline because, Mark, I am holding our pint glass that we had from a couple of years ago that has hashtag cheers to the 6. And I believe we had a debate off pod about whether or not we wanted to turn this into a double entendre. Did we want to make this a play? If you know, Mark, the 6 is a reference to Toronto. I don't know if that's the number of counties in it or if it's referenced to like an area code or a zip code, but the 6 is a common thing that the cool kids over at Toronto FC will refer to Toronto as. And so we were debating, are you cheersing to the 6 as in your favorite number 6, as in your favorite defensive midfielder? Are we doing cheers to the 6s as in general, we like demons who hold the high line? Or do we want to do a double entendre with referring to all of our positive memories from Toronto in MLS Cup 2010? And so you and I had a debate about this, Mark. I can't remember what the answer was. This could very well, Mark, have been a typo on your part. You went with what you preferred. But I distinctly remember us giving a pint glass to Drew Moore and him trying with a beer after retiring, and then wondering to himself, was this a reference to the number 6 as in the position, or was this a Toronto reference, said the former Colorado Rapids player who won an MLS Cup in Toronto and then won an MLS Cup with Toronto. So, Mark, I think it is fitting that we have, just like how Jack Price and Danny Wilson, the joke about is Scottish salmon a noun or a verb, I think it's better that there's a typo and it leads to a double meaning that then people can debate about rather than us getting the actual quote right. Mark, I was at Colorado Rapids training earlier today. I've got some news and notes. So even though the Rapids were not practicing on From Field 20, Mark, would we like to reprise our session, our segment called From Field 20?
I think that's super exciting. And the fact that you went out to training is just phenomenal. So thanks for doing that, Matt. What did you learn? What did you see? How was the weather? Who was there? Who was sick? Who was hurt? Any progress reports on injured players, any players kind of working on the side? What can you tell us?
Weather was absolutely gorgeous, Mark. It was in the mid-50s. It was slightly windy, but I was there, and I was in the sun wearing some dark colors, and it was warm. Not a lot of players wearing long sleeves. Couldn't have said that a month ago. And the Burgundy boys, Mark, are getting back to being healthy. Reggie Cannon was out with the groin injury last week. He was practicing fully. Andreas Maxou, off of making his season debut, he was practicing fully. And Darren Yapi, Mark, who we were told end of March, early April, by Chris Armas after a shoulder injury that he sustained earlier in the offseason. He was back to practicing fully as well. We also saw Ali Fadalmark. Today would have been his second ever training session with the first team. And Mark, I would say he looked the part from a technical standpoint on the ball skills. I think looks the part for being a Rapids benchist player. And I saw the versatility in the various drills that they were working on with a little bit of counter-pressing, some challenging plays, a little bit of team scrimmaging as well. There was one really good play, Mark, where the D-mids were flaring the ball out wide, and then it was two attackers through two defensive wide players. They had to get through that and then put a cross into the box, and then you had two central forwards versus two center backs and the goalkeeper in that entire sequence. And there was one of those plays, Mark, where it was Ali Fadal against the two Bassett brothers, and Ollie totally baits Cole into kind of a lackluster pass, thinking that it could easily get to Sam Bassett, and he just intercepts it, dribbles past Cole. Cole had some words for himself in that performance, Mark, and nearly scored going down the other play as well. Now, that was the best thing I saw Ollie Fadal do, and the rest of the stuff was mid at best, but Mark, I would argue that from just that training session, that is better from Ollie Fadal than I saw from, say, Wayne Frederick 12 months ago this time. And if you told me that he was a bench player who's going to be the second midfielder to come off the bench on the road against San Jose, I wouldn't be super concerned or surprised about that. I still think coming in, new team, getting used to MLS, only played in the fourth division of Spain, he's probably still a Rapids 2 player for the first third to a half of this season. But early returns on that look good. Other injury news as well, Mark. Ted Cudi-Pietro is still mostly doing individual work. He is on schedule to return in early April. That's exciting. And he did do some team drills. And we did see Sam Vines as well doing some individual work, Mark. So if I had to guess right now of the players who've been recently injured, Mark, I would say Connor Ronan, Andreas Maxou, Reggie Cannon, probably all back. If any of them will be listed on the injury report come Friday for the San Jose game, it is probably Reggie, and he's probably just listed as questionable. I'm not sure. Darren Yapi, Mark, could be back this week based on what I saw from training. If he is held out, it's probably just precautionary. Ali Fadal available. He came off the bench against Austin 2 for Rapids 2 last Friday. Ted's on schedule. Got some media availability with him. Sam Vines, haven't gotten a timeline on him. Obviously, he's, what, a month past when he was supposed to be back. But the Burgundy boys are looking a lot healthier, Mark, and that's really, really exciting to see. Couple things that I noticed, Mark. I had a really good conversation with Josh Atencio after training. That was really positive, and he's feeling really good about the situation, getting used to it coming over from Seattle. I'll have some content on that later this week as well. And Ted, just a really, I think, genuine, upbeat but competitive guy who's kind of intense. And I think showed his personality in a good way, his character in the 5 or 6 minutes that I was speaking with him for the first time. But I think you can see him step over the white line and he turns into a different person. And he's a competitive SOB who gets upset when his team loses the ball and wants to win it back and absolutely crush you into the ground. So I'm really excited about both of these players, Mark. We've already seen Josh Atencio. Returns are good. I think Ted will bring something a little bit different to the winger core. And Chris is going to have a little bit of everything to choose on that menu when he's picking who's going to play on the left and who's going to play on the right. Now that it's hopefully not Cole Bassett out of position. Mark, anything that I didn't cover, any questions that you have for me before we close out from Field 20?
Do you think that do you feel like today you got a sense of like who's likely to start this week in San Jose?
I think Reggie's the only doubt on this, Mark. I would bet that it's probably, I think Andres was playing more with Mike Edwards, but it's not uncommon for them to rotate out the squad a little bit more, Mark. I would be willing to bet, I think it's 50-50 between, is it Ian Murphy or Andreas Maxou next to Chido? I think it's clearly Chido on the right, or Chido at center back, Keegan on the right, Reggie, if he's able to play, on the left. Obviously, Zach Steffen won't be with the national team, so he'll be in goal. I think it'll be the three-man midfield, Mark, Ollie, Josh, Cole Bassett. And then I think it's probably Kevin on the left, and then TBD with what's going on tactically of whether or not you'd want to see Omir on the right or Calvin. I would sense, Mark, that the Rapids are more, because San Jose's been playing mostly in a 3-5-2, I think you would want numbers a little bit more inside in the midfield in order to win that and then try and create stuff in transition. So I would lean Omir personally. That is me trying to guess what I think Chris Armas is thinking, not necessarily something that I saw in training today that was indicative that Omir was getting more starter reps than Calvin Harris was necessarily. Anything else, Mark, or shall we move on to the aforementioned San Jose Earthquakes?
Let's preview a game.
Listeners, this coming Saturday, March 15th, 8:30 p.m., the Colorado Rapids will have to beware the Ides of March at PayPal Park as they take on the San Jose Earthquakes. We are currently 3-34 through the Colorado Rapids 2025 MLS regular season. The Rapids sitting in seventh in the Western Conference, 5 points off of 3 games played. They have 1 win, no losses, and 2 draws, a goal difference of +1, and away from Dick's Sporting Goods Park, they are 1-0-1 this season. San Jose, Mark, currently sitting third in the Western Conference. They have 6 points off of 3 games played, 2 wins, 1 loss, and 0 draws. They have a goal difference of +4. Granted, Mark, most of that came from a win over Real Salt Lake, the opening game of the season. And at home at PayPal Park, they have 1 win and 1 loss on the season. Mark, this is a different looking San Jose Earthquakes, and I'm not sure what to make of them because the Earthquakes are always the chaos merchants, but they're usually a bad chaos merchant, but in a way where they could lose 17 games, but then somehow beat LAFC 3-0 on a random Saturday night at PayPal Park for no apparent reason. But also, they, in theory, Mark, are better on paper than they've been since, what, probably Wondolowski won the Golden Boot, whatever year that was, a decade ago now. Bruce Arena's come in. He's their head coach. They've basically brought in, Mark, the entire New England Revolution defense that would have been last year. They've got Dave Romney, who played with Bruce Arena at LA Galaxy. They've got Nick Lima, who used to play for the San Jose Earthquakes, is now back at the San Jose Earthquakes. They've got Mark Anthony Kay, who was brought over by Bruce Arena to New England Revolution. And then, of course, they brought in two kind of guys on the out with their teams, but have proven it previously in MLS. You've got Chicho Arango, who is fantastic, Mark, for Real Salt Lake. The first half of the season, he was potentially competing for the MVP, and then he did some bad stuff, and then he got suspended, and then he got frustrated with the club, and then he forced his way out, and then he was a cashfer over to San Jose. And then you've got Joseph Martinez, who's just scoring goals, but also he had an ACL tear. He's not as good as he was with Atlanta, and he's basically just like one season being awesome, but also crashing and burning with his MLS teams, and now he's doing that at San Jose. They play mostly a 3-5-2, Mark. Mark, this is a, I don't know that I've ever seen it, Mark. If I were to go to AI and say, put Bruce Arena on a new MLS team that doesn't spend a whole lot of money and has to do a one offseason rebuild to try and compete for a trophy, I feel like this is what AI would have spat out of, just like fringe MLSers who Bruce Arena thinks he has a net differential on, guys who he's coached in the past who he trusts, and then two guys who've proven they can score goals who might be a cultural issue, and they're going to come in and Bruce Arena is going to put the hammer down and it's my way or the highway, deal with it. I won cups at DC United and LA Galaxy, and if I hadn't said a bad off-jest, bad joke that then got leaked to the media and to the public, I probably could have won an MLS Cup at New England Revolution. Mark, what, if anything, do you make of the San Jose Earthquakes team? What, if anything, is possible on Saturday night in the Bay Area?
I mean, I don't really know how they do it and how they did it. The loss against Minnesota, to me, this is kind of like the, will the real San Jose Earthquakes please stand up? Because the first week against Real Salt Lake, none of that made sense to me. Like, Real Salt Lake is a team that I have in the top five of the Western Conference, and San Jose is in the bottom five. And so the fact that there was a full-on reversal here was just kind of like a weird kind of hex. Sporting Kansas City is not a meaningful game in the sense that Sporting is a terrible football club, and they're going to lose most of their games this season, and that's just how it is. And so no data could be determined from that. However, San Jose went in there on the road, got 2 goals, then got a red card, actually a second yellow for Hernan Lopez, and then had to grind out the rest of the second half on 10 men and did it and got out of there with a win. It is, like you said, it's a really weird lineup. Ian Harkes is kind of a cast-off player. Dave Romney, I wouldn't call him a cast-off, but he's like, he's a solid but unspectacular average defender. He was a very good fullback, but fullbacks kind of age poorly. He's 31 years old, and he moved into the middle, and he's good enough for them. Amal Pellegrino is a pretty bad football player. He was a big DP signing out of Norway. He had, like, I think 55 goals in 79 games in Norway and came here and just hasn't scored. He was a bad choice by the front office, and Bruce Arena's trying to make something of him. And then they've got Joseph Martinez, and they've got Chicho Arango, and it's you know, I think the talk of preseason by a lot of other podcasts and MLS pundits was, is Joseph Martinez better coming off the bench in the 70th minute to spell Chicho Arango, or is it better to have them paired up? And I think it was Dave Goss on SoccerWise who said, I think Bruce Arena is going to put them together, but I don't think that's a good idea. And that's what he's done. And that's how they're starting. Every game is, it's a 3-4-1-2, I think, is basically the way the lineup looks. That's an interesting thing. There's a lot of width in that lineup. It does mean, though, that the Rapids may be able to go through the middle if they can. They won't get really truly stopped until they get to the back line. It'll be interesting to see whether the Rapids go into this game hunting and looking for blood on the road. And I think the San Jose fans have, you know, I mentioned in my preseason rundown of San Jose that they have either zero or one playoff appearance at that stadium, which used to be called Avaya and I think is now called PayPal Park. Or maybe they have zero playoff appearances in that stadium. One playoff appearance, Matt has it. It's a lot of futility for a team, and it's pretty disconcerting and depressing. And so I feel for San Jose fans, but I don't want to feel for them at the expense of the Colorado Rapids getting 3 points. I would say in this game, I'm going to give you my prediction, and I'll throw it to you, Matt. I'm going to say I think I predicted last week the Rapids would go to Austin and get out with a tie. I was thrilled that they got a win. I mean, I didn't really comment on the fact that your comments about the penalty kicks were spot on. There was nothing for me to add. I do think that the fact that the Rapids drew two penalties and got out of both of them on VAR is lucky. It just so happens they were both, I agree with you, that both calls were not the right call, and so VAR reversing them was great. There was a very good chance, though, because VAR doesn't always reverse things unless it's clear and obvious, that they might not have gone that way, and that game could have turned out to be a tie. That's my long-winded windup for saying, I think this one's going to be a tie. I think this one will go either 1-1 or 2-2. Cole Bassett will have a goal, and I think the other goal will come from Georgi Mihailovic, who's been an assist machine so far. And so I think he's due to get something in there. And Hafa will take the week off. So not because he's a bad guy, but because he has 3 goals in 2 games. At the rate that he's going, he will finish the MLS season with 48 goals for the season. And I think that that's unlikely. But if he scores a brace in this match, we will name another room in my house after him.
A couple of other players that I want to point out here, Marco. We forgot to mention designated player Christian Espinoza. Espinoza has been really, really good for San Jose, even when they've been bad. And he mostly plays out wide, Mark. I remember him as a left winger, but in the most recent game, FotMob had him playing him on the right. So, Mark, to your point about potential concerns about injuries or what are the Rapids doing on the back line, I feel pretty good about Reggie Cannon versus Espinoza if it's Rapids left back versus San Jose's right winger. I don't know how I feel about that matchup if it's Ian Murphy. No disrespect, he's just playing slightly out of position as a center back, so that'll be something to certainly watch. Where's Espinoza playing? And I would say, Mark, I would argue in this analogy, if we're talking Espinoza, who was kind of the one good thing that San Jose had last year, Anand, I thought, was a little bit mid, playing in the middle. We'll see whether or not he plays in the middle or on the left opposite Espinoza going up against Keegan Rosenberry on the Rapids right back position. But I would argue, Mark, in this analogy, I would say that Espinoza is probably the Cole Bassett, Chicho Arango's the Georgi Mihailovic, and then Joseph Martinez is the Rafael Navajo, and that Espinosa is going to do stuff in the midfield, be a part of the buildup, and then a part of the end finish. And if anything, Chicho's going to be the one who's creating opportunities for himself. But if it's the two strikers to where it's one assisting the other, it is definitely Chicho passing it to Joseph to score. And Mark, we've seen that these two have been Rapids killers in the past. Joseph Martinez scored here in Atlanta's first game. I think that was a 3-0 or a 3-1 in the Anthony Hudson era. The Rapids final, or Atlanta's final game at Bobby Dodd before they opened up the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in their inaugural year, that was a 1-0 victory with Joseph Martinez scoring in that one. And I will not recount to Colorado Rapids fans the various things that Chicho Arango has done to them when the Rapids have gone to Rio Tinto Stadium, or before when Chicho was playing for LAFC at now BMO. It would have been at the time Bank of California Stadium. Last thing that I'll say on the Quakes, Mark, to your point about their early start being decent, but how much of that is them playing two bad teams, and what does this mean, like signal versus noise, is, Mark, the collective XG that San Jose has so far this season in their three games is 5.31 goals. I should point out they have scored 4, 5, 6. So they've scored 6 on 5.31, Mark, and meanwhile they've conceded 5.67. So roughly, Mark, their aggregate score so far this season should be 5-5 or 5-6. And while they should have given up 5 or 6 goals, they've only given up 2. And so I think that 4-0 drubbing that they had of RSL, as much as Rapids fans were loving dancing on Pablo Mascherini's grave in the opening weekend of MLS, that was 2.41 XG for the Quakes to 1.83 for Real Salt Lake. Realistically, yeah. Mark, that game probably should have ended 2-2. So, and look, RSL had a bunch of turnover last year because they sold their winger, and I can't remember what they did, and Matt Crooks wasn't particularly good, and then they traded Chicho Arango, who then scored against Real Salt Lake. You already talked about how San Jose wasn't a good team, Mark. I like Minnesota this year. I think they've done a lot of really good work, especially the disaster they were going into the season this time last year. And, you know, I thought it was a relatively even game where I thought Minnesota was the slightly better team on the road, and you lost 1-0. And, Mark, being an MLS team, even with all the turnover, Bruce Arena knows how important home games are. You can't really be losing games 1-0 on the road to a team that you dominated possession but then lost the XG battle. That's something to look at necessarily. So all this to say, Mark, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say MLS is a little weird this year. The Eastern Conference top three teams are pretty much the exact teams you expect them to be. Actually, people thought Philadelphia was going to have a down year, so they're a bit of a surprise, but they're in first place right now. 3 wins in 3 games. Number 2 is Inter Miami. Number 3 is Columbus. In the Western Conference, the top 3 teams, nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition. None of these teams would have been expected to be at the top of the table. Vancouver is 3-0 to start the season. San Diego, 2 wins and a draw to start the season. And San Jose, 2 wins and a loss to start the season at the top of the table. So it's pretty weird. To be fair, the reasons probably that LAFC, LA Galaxy, and Seattle Sounders aren't at the top right now is, one, the Sounders always start slow, and two, LAFC has put all of their chips in on CONCACAF Champions Cup, LA Galaxy also. So I think in the Western Conference, the teams are kind of like fighting through multiple competitions at the same time, and they're prioritizing the other one. But that being said, it's a weird and wacky beginning to the season. Things will settle out midsummer. I think we'll start to see the cream rise to the top and the chaff be separated from the wheat. That's quite the food-related mixed metaphor. I wonder how many other podcasters / sports people have ever tried to combine all those foods into one weird analogy and then come out as strangely as I did.
Speaking of teams at the top of the Western Conference, Mark, I just saw that LAFC has scored a road goal at Columbus, so they're probably advancing. What that would be, I think, 4-2 on aggregate with an away goal as well. So we'll see what that looks like.
And I ducked away from the other game, but Cruz Azul went on to pummel Seattle 4-1. We'll see what happens with Paul Ariola and his injury probably tomorrow. But yeah, that's all she wrote for Seattle this year. So we'll see what happens to them as the season moves on.
Last two things that I'll say on San Jose, Mark. One, from a personnel standpoint, William Yarbrough is no longer with them. He left the club in the offseason. As of right now, unless something's breaking or changed, he is without a club, Mark. So I would expect it will be Daniel the Brazilian who will be in goal for San Jose. So to Rapids fans who were expecting Yarby to be there, he's not there. And last thing I'll say, Mark, I didn't give my prediction. I like a draw in this game as well. I like a scoring draw. Give me 2-2. I'll agree with you. Bassett scores, Mark. I think we finally see a goal off of a set piece. So a Georgie assist, probably to one of the center backs. And I'll say, it'll probably be Chicho to Joseph, but it'll probably be one of those. Then maybe another chaotic play where, you know, a Quakes player who doesn't normally score a lot of goals will get a goal in this one. But Mark, I like weird stuff happens at PayPal, and regardless of Bruce Arena's calming, boring influence on a team that's going to play a possession-ish, counterattacking-ish 3-5-2, I still like this to be some Quakes, Chaos Merchant, MLS After Dark play. Let's get to Ask HTHL here, Rabbi. We will start with Mr. Biz, who asked a really good question over on Burgundy Sky, Rabbi, and that was as big as Gio Reyna's stan and his transfer value rumored to be between 10 to 15 million, that's in euros, what MLS club would be a good fit, knowing that he'll remain in Europe, but you guys can dream. Mark, if you had to pick a good landing spot for Gio Reyna to get things back on track, coming back to MLS, where would you have him play?
Ooh, that is a very interesting and strange question. Well, he needs to be with a team where the quality level is high enough that he will be competing at a high level and will be doing well. He needs to be someplace where he can get along with other people, and not slip into a difficult situation. He probably needs someplace which has a few distractions. I don't know. I mean, a lot of that to me sounds like Charlotte would be a good landing spot for him. They're a decent team. They're in need of a little bit of star power. I think that would, I mean, they have Wilfred Zaha this season, so it feels like Gio Reyna would be like a nice interior addition for him. That's a good landing spot. I mean, I think San Diego would be a good landing spot because they're on the come up. They're very exciting. And maybe he combines nicely with Chucky Lozano. That would be a possibility. There's some teams on here that I kind of looked at and I went, oh, that's a bad idea. Cincinnati's a bad idea because they don't kind of carry the swagger that he would be like, oh, I got sent to Cincinnati, and he would complain about it. I think NYCFC would be a bad place to send him because he's a young guy and he's expecting, you know, to be treated like a celebrity. And I don't think the distractions of New York City would be good. He's not a good fit at either of the LA teams because this is going to sound weird. He's not good enough. He doesn't want to be at a place where he has to compete for a starting job. Or
and LA Galaxy have no money at this point, Mark.
Right. Well, that's obvious. But like the other thing is like, he needs to go someplace where he walks in on day one and says, I'm the number 10. And they go, yeah, we know you're the number 10. Here's the number 10 kit. You play in the middle of the field. Do whatever you want. You don't have to defend. We'll make up for you. There's not a lot of teams like that in MLS anymore. There's not a lot of teams who want a guy who has a semi-toxic reputation and can really only play in one direction, right? Like, if you're Lionel Messi, you get to do that. If you're Dennis Bouanga, you get to do that. There's a couple other players in the league. Olivier Giroud, who, by the way, great article in The Athletic, I think, yesterday about the fact that he has 0 goals since he's come to MLS and what that's all about. And I noticed it when he was in Commerce City. Like, I took some great photos of him really close. That was an amazing thing. I got to stand very close to Olivier Giroud and Mo Salah in the same year. But like, Giroud didn't look happy about being in the cold. He didn't look happy running around on the pitch, not getting service. And I've watched one other game of LAFC after the Rapids game. He just doesn't look comfortable kind of making off the ball runs where nobody feeds him. And I think that that's a problem. Anyways, this is actually about Gio Reyna. Those were a couple of my takes. I think Austin wouldn't be a terrible idea either. They're just a fun place to end up, but I don't know that anybody else. I think it makes sense for him to come to the United States on a lot of levels. Whether he helps teams or turns out to be just as problematic as he did in Dortmund is a good question.
I actually like him playing at NYCFC, Mark, because basically, you know, they shipped out Talos Magno. They don't have a whole lot going on offensively. They're basically relying on, what, 49-year-old Maxi Morales to be the straw that stirs the drink. So you could have Gio play centrally with him. You could have him play out wide. And for the people, Mark, who are worried about his fitness and potentially getting injured, he's not going to have to run as much on a smaller pitch. And hopefully he just plays on the side that doesn't have the dirt infield on it. So that's possible, or at the very least, I think it would be a move in the net positive. I also, believe it or not, Mark, I believe DC would be a really good fit as well, because basically their entire offense is overlapping fullbacks and then just lumping the ball into the middle of the box to Benteke. That is effective for making Christian Benteke the golden boot winner of the year in MLS. That's not necessarily conducive to DC making the playoffs, so I think they could use a little bit of creativity centrally, and if that means that Gio's ultimately being a saucy boy and then finding Benteke's head as well, I think that's conducive to them being effective. And it's one where, Mark, I think unquestionably he would be the star of the team alongside Benteke. He would de facto be the starter. I think he would improve and make it easier for them to change up the style of play in a way that would be more successful and more aesthetically pleasing for a frustrated DC United fan base. I think it would help Troy Lesane save his job, and I think it would help them be better. They'd have more versatile ways of scoring, and it'd be another guy who could very easily get the ball to Christian Benteke, and if you get the ball to Christian Benteke, he's probably going to score goals. So those are just my thoughts. Mark, and then the other really good Ask HTHL we had was actually a multiple choice question from You Talking to Shmee, who asks, fun hypothetical. You have a choice to re-sign 1, Andrew Gutman, 2, Jossie Zardes, or 3, Clint Irwin. Given the Rapids' current depth concerns, which one are you taking? Mark, Andrew Gutman would be a outside back option for the Colorado Rapids, who are thin right now because of the injury to Sam Vines, and Reggie Cannon's been questionable at times the last couple weeks as well. You've got Jossie Zardes, who has a high floor, a high-ish floor, but a relatively low ceiling as an alternative to Hafa Navajo, as opposed to going from Hafa basically to Darren Yapi. And then the Colorado Rapids currently have no third goalkeeper, and potentially we're starting Adam Beaudry with no backup in the home playoff game against Portland in a couple weeks, because Zach Steffen is going to be with the national team. Mark, purely from a number standpoint, I personally am going to pick option 3, option C, Clint Irwin in this one, because the Rapids have an open roster slot for a third goalkeeper. While we don't necessarily feel great about what the Rapids are doing at the fullback position, they're kind of in an injury crisis because they've had 3 or 4 injuries at that position group. Find any MLS team that has 3 or 4 injuries to the same position, and they're not going to have a whole lot of depth option. We don't need a fifth fullback option if we're including Ian Murphy as a possible left back there. I do think that the Rapids do have options, albeit they're younger and unproven, in Darren Yapi. Alex Harris has played at the forward position. Calvin Harris was a false 9 at times in college as well. The Rapids have options and have guys who have scored goals in that position and have scored goals for the Rapids previously. My reason for picking Clint Irwin is purely the technicality of they literally don't have a third first team goalkeeper, and they are 1 Adam Beaudry injury in the Portland game away from probably playing Mike Edwards in goal. So on that technicality, I'm picking them. Mark, which one of these positions would you love to have a former PID come back and play in Burgundy?
I mean, I'm worried about the fullback position, like I mentioned before. So it's Andrew Goodman for me. That's the obvious one. But yeah, I'd take Zach McMath at the third goalkeeper position. Was that that wasn't the choice though? Who was the third goalkeeper that they were offering?
It was Clint Irwin.
Yeah, I'd go for Zach McMath. I mean, he's kind of also in a similar position. I would not go for William Yarborough, even though you mentioned that he's there. But that's just because I like Zach McMath, and I'd like to see him back with the Rapids. I'd like to say hello to his mother again. We had a lovely talk in the stands one time. It was fantastic. She's this nice Jewish woman from Philadelphia. I don't know that I've ever done a voice. I don't think this is quite exactly it, but it's a New York Jewish accent, and Bobola, I have to tell you, this is maybe my favorite accent to do in the world. I got so many accents, but Jewish mother from Long Island is basically, from Brooklyn, is about as good as it gets for me.
Oh my God, Mark. Your impression of Janice from Friends. Okay, we're done.
Mark, you had it for a second. You were on it. You were on it.
Okay, yes. I could say the one thing that she says all the time. Oh, my God. Anyways, I agree with you, Mark, in the sense that Andrew Gutman is probably the best of these three players because Jossie Zardes is without a club. Is Clint Irwin a backup somewhere, Mark? I'd have to go Google that. And Jossie Zardes without a club, and Andrew Gutman is starting for Chicago Fire, and he is not the reason that Chicago Fire are a mess right now. So I think the best of those three players is Andrew Gutman. Mark, I think there's a very real possibility in the next 2 weeks, Sam Vines comes back, Jackson Travis comes back, and Reggie is completely okay, and then you have the proper depth at the fullback position, and then the more pressing concern would be what happens to Zach Steffen from an injury or a call-up standpoint to the national team, to where then you have just unproven, played one game in MLS, Adam Beaudry. I would love to have a reliable, kind of mid to below average aging version of Clint Irwin as the safety valve there, whereas I feel healthy at all other positions, there are young options that you would want to test in that role. That'll do it for us, Mark. Shall we get out of here?
I've had a full lid. We're all set to go.
Listeners, you can follow us collectively on social media at Rabbits96Podcast across most platforms. We are on Blue Sky or Burgundy Sky more often than we are on Twitter or X. You can follow us on social media. Mark is Rabbi at soccer_rabbi or Rabbi Mark Astor Goodman. I am at LWS Matt Pollard on Elon's app, and over on Burgundy Sky, I am at by Matt Pollard. Check out Mark's written work and subscribe to us to get our merch, to get the scarf at holdingthehighline.substack.com. We also now own holdingthehighline.com, so that'll direct you there if you're confused on that. And check out most of my written work, including content from Josh Atencio and Ted Cudipietro earlier today at training over at burgundywave.com. Rate, review, share, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Until your favorite Silicon Valley tech bro who's moved to Denver because the vibes are better about us to convince them to become Rapids fans as opposed to Quakes fans. Rapids fans, we will see you next week after hopefully a chaotic but successful trip out to the Bay Area.
Peace! Doing?
I don't.
What is going on?
I'm getting it wrong. My notes are wrong. I'm sorry. We might cut this.
You probably should.